The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter Number 14, Text Number 6, given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on October 6th, 2017, in Vrindavan, India.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Tata
Api
Bhuman
Mahima
Agunashya
Te
Vibodhum
Arhati
Amala
Anta
Atmabhi
Avikriyat
Sva
Anubhavat
Arupata
Hi
Ananya
Bhodya
Atmataya
na
cha
anyata.
Tata pibhuma mahima doesn't exactly fit. Tata pibhuma mahima gunashyate. Vibodhamarhat amalantar atmabhi Avikriyat svannu bhavadda rupato Yananya bodhyat matayana chanyata Tathapi bhuman mahima gunashyate Vibhodhamarhat amalantar atmabhi Avikriyat svannu bhavyadda rupato Yananya bodhyat matayana chanyata Tathapi bhuman mahima gunashyate Vibodhamarhat amalantar atmabhi Avikriyat svannu bhavadda rupato Yananya bodhyat matayana chanyata Tata-api,
nevertheless,
Bhuman,
O
limitless one,
Mahima,
the potency,
Agunashya,
of him who has no material qualities,
Te,
of you,
Vibodhum,
to understand,
Arhati,
one is able,
Amala,
spotless,
Anta
Atmabhi,
with mind and senses,
Avikriyat,
not based on
material differentiations,
Sva
Anubhavat,
by
perception of the Supreme
Soul,
Arupata,
without
attachment to
material forms,
He,
indeed,
Ananya,
Bodhya,
Atmataya,
as
self-manifested,
without
the help
of
any other illuminating
agent,
not
cha,
and
Anyata,
otherwise.
Translation
and purport by
His Divine Grace,
Srila
Prabhupada.
Non-devotees,
however,
cannot
realize your
full personal feature.
Nevertheless,
it may be possible
for them to realize
your expansion as
the impersonal
Supreme
by cultivating
direct perception of the
Self within the
heart. But they can do this only by purifying their mind and senses of all conceptions of material distinctions and all attachment to material sense objects. Only in this way will your impersonal feature manifest itself to them. It is difficult for conditioned souls to understand all the transcendental features of the Supreme Lord. As confirmed in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam 1-11, Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavan Niti Shabjate. The transcendental existence of God is understood progressively as the impersonal effulgence, the localized super soul in everyone's heart, and finally the Supreme Personality of Godhead existing in his eternal abode. Lord Krishna's transcendental existence is beyond the qualities of material nature. Thus here the Lord is referred to as Agunasya, without material qualities. Even by practicing yoga or engaging in advanced philosophical speculation, one will find it very difficult to understand clearly the transcendental existence beyond the modes of material nature. And these processes are virtually useless for understanding the Lord's own unlimited transcendental qualities, which are far beyond the impersonal conception of spiritual existence. Only by the mercy of the pure devotees of the Lord, or by associating with the Lord himself, can one begin the process of realizing the personal feature of God, a process that culminates in pure Krishna consciousness, the final and supreme perfection of knowledge. Vandeham Sri Guru Shri Jata Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Padijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Ladita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nivishesha Shunyavadi Paschadyadesha Tarine. So the Absolute Truth is understood in three features: impersonal Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Prabhupada describes this as perfect realization of the Absolute Truth, more perfect realization of the Absolute Truth, and most perfect realization of the Absolute Truth. By mental speculation, one may be able to come to the impersonal conception. But unless one is actually engaged in the devotional service of the Lord by the pure devotee of the Lord, the topmost, most perfect realization of the Supreme remains unrealized. It's very, very important, therefore, to get the dust of the lotus feet of the pure devotees upon one's head, because it is only by their grace that one can understand God as a person, God as pastimes, God as a form, etc., etc., etc. Many people embrace the impersonal conception of God. They don't know how to engage in devotional service, but through a negation of the material nature, they come up the idea of the Absolute Truth beyond this material existence. But they don't understand the nature of that Absolute Truth. They cannot factually connect with it. This is why impersonal Brahman realization is described as vimukti maninas. It is liberation in the mind only. Even though we talk about Sayuja Mukti, it is Mukti and is not Mukti at the same time. Because you haven't factually situated yourself on the transcendental platform, you see, just by that impersonal realization. You've negated the material, you see, but you haven't made positive the spiritual position. So without that, you see, you have no solid position. You may deny the falsity of the material existence, but unless you have a positive platform to stand on, Bhagavatam says they fall back again. They fall back again and again. They cannot remain in that position of negating material existence unless they make the spiritual existence positive. Then they are solidly situated. So we are very fortunate that we have gotten that mercy of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Tridandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada, to actually engage in the devotional service of the Lord. Personally, I was chanting Hare Krishna, but I had an impersonal conception still. Even though I was chanting, I had a picture of Radha and Krishna, still I had an impersonal conception. And it wasn't until I opened my heart up to the devotees and heard from the devotees with an open heart, trying to absorb the message that they were teaching, that I could actually grasp the personal conception of the Supreme Person. So we shouldn't cheat ourselves by either holding on to material sense gratification or holding on to the impersonal conception. We shouldn't cheat ourselves. We have to kick out this false conception that I am the Supreme. You see? That's the difficulty in personal realization. What got us here to begin with? I am the Supreme. This false conception of being the Supreme brought us here to begin with. An impersonal philosophy simply reinforces it. That's why it's sometimes called the last snare of Maya. You see, we're in the forest of delusion and there's so many snares. You avoided this snare, you avoided that snare, you avoided so many snares. But this is your escaping the forest, that last snare catches you. Yes, I am God. You see? So therefore we have to understand how actually poisonous is this impersonal philosophy. Nirvishesha shunyavadi paschacha desha tarine, we pray every day. Prabhupada has delivered the Western countries which are so grossly poisoned with this impersonalism and voidism. Actually, there's not much difference between impersonalism and voidism. Impersonalism, everything is one. Voidism, everything is zero. Not much difference. Exactly the same thing. So, our philosophy is very sublime. Achincha beta beta tattva. The absolute truth is simultaneously, inconceivably one and different. We understand the oneness of everything because actually everything is Krishna in one sense, because it's all His. There's nothing. How does Prabhupada say that? There is nothing but Krishna. There is nothing but Krishna, and nothing is Krishna, save and except His original personal form. There is nothing but Krishna, and nothing is Krishna, save and except His original personal form. So it's just like you say, wow, that doesn't make any sense. Yes, it makes a lot of sense. Consider the sun example. Here comes the sun. The sun actually, I'm sitting here in my room thinking, here comes the sun. I can see the sun rays shining into my room. Did the sun come to my room? No. Did the sun come to my room? Yes. The sun is simultaneously come and not come, because if it was the sun planet, I'd be dead. He'd burn to a crisp. The sun planet is the sun, not the sun rays, but the sun rays are also the sun. The expanded form of the sun is the sun rays, so that is also sun, you see. So the expansion of Krishna, which is namely everything other than Krishna, it's His expanded energy. You see, there's two things in all of existence. There's Krishna and the energy of Krishna. Nothing else exists. You see. And that energy is also Krishna. So simultaneously everything is Krishna, and simultaneously you have Krishna and Krishna's energy. Those are the two things. On one hand, everything is Krishna. On the other hand, everything is Krishna and Krishna's energy. So the energy is Krishna and is not Krishna at the same time. So we are the energy of Krishna. Therefore, we need to remember that. How is it that we exist? Why do we exist? What is the purpose of our existence? This we have to very deeply and soberly and seriously understand, because until we do this, we're just going to be running around like some wild monkey here in Vrindavan trying to steal a banana, you see. Philosophical banana, yes, I am the Supreme. Or, I am great, or, who are you to correct me? You see? See? We have to give up this false conception that I am the Supreme. You may say, but I don't think I'm the Supreme. I don't think that I'm the Supreme. Then why are you so puffed up? Come on in and shut the door. No mosquitoes welcome or whatever's. You're a little late. You have to learn how to be on time. You're grossly late. By 40, 38 minutes late. So you have to learn how to be punctual.
That's so important for him.
We'll talk later about that. So, this Krishna consciousness movement is the prime benediction for humanity at large because it brings you out of that false conception that the universe revolves around you. It doesn't revolve around you or me. It doesn't. It revolves around not only this universe, but the conglomeration of all the spiritual and material universes. They all revolve around Krishna. You see. So right now we're out of orbit. You see. We're out of orbit. We've got to get back in our orbits, our natural orbits. You see. Then when you do that, when you get back in your natural orbit, then you become ecstatic. Until then, your mind's bewildered and you're miserable, you're depressed, you're confused. You see? You're angry, or you're lusty, or you're greedy. All these diseases are due to the fact that we're not in orbit, we're not in our proper situation in relation with Krishna. You see? So we have to learn how to get in the proper position with Krishna. Until then, we're just like, you know, beating ourselves in the head for no purpose. I mean, are you a masochist? Why are you punishing yourself, you see, by not fully surrendering to Krishna right now? Stop being so damn masochistic, we could say, you see, to ourselves and to everyone. Why be a stupid masochist punishing yourself by not fully surrendering to Krishna right now? Why are you holding on to this false conception that you're the Lord, trying to enjoy separately from Krishna? Kick it out with boot right now. That's the kind of seriousness we have to have with each of our own minds. Okay, mind, kick it out. Kick out this nonsense idea that you are the Supreme, my dear mind. That's it. Bajahume mana Srinandanandana Abhaya Chadanada Vindare. My dear mind, please engage yourself in the devotional service of the divine son of Nanda Baba, Nanda Maharaj. My dear mind, please, please stop this stupid charade, this false parade of strutting around like you're the Supreme. Stop it, my dear mind. Stop being such a nuisance. Stop being such a rascal. Stop being such a pest. And start becoming a good mind that is always absorbed in thinking about, speaking about, you see, what the mind, of course, thinks. Always absorbed in thinking about Krishna, his transcendental name, his fame, his pastimes, his entourage, his paraphernalia, his dham, his devotees, his teachings, etc. They're unlimited, glorifiable, glorious things about Krishna we can absorb ourselves in. We just have to learn how to transfer our consciousness from matter to spirit. We have to train ourselves how to do that. Right now, our minds are caught up in the material nature. That's why we're late for Bhagavatam class, because we're caught up in the material nature. You see? So we have to learn how to fix our minds in Krishna consciousness. That will bring us to the state of unlimited happiness. I mean, why punish yourself when you could have unlimited nectar at every minute? Would you like to have unlimited nectar at every minute or not? Yes. We'd like to, but we're acting as if we don't want it. You see how stupid we are? Even though we say, yes, I want it, but still we go on thinking, speaking, and acting as if we don't want it. You see, that's the problem. That's the problem where each one of us is facing psychologically. even though we know that's what we want, we don't think like we really want it. Our mind goes off and there's all these other tracks. It's always going here and there, jumping like those monkeys, you know, steal this, steal that. Where's a little banana? Where's a little sense gratification? It's time to get serious, Prabhus and Matajis. It's time to get very serious now and stop this monkey mind, dancing monkey mind, lila, engagement right now. So, maybe there's some questions I can try to answer them. Yes?
Why do so many meditators identify with the super soul?
Why do so many meditators identify with the super soul? Because they haven't learned. They think they are the super soul.
Yes.
Because they haven't been blessed by the dust of the lotus feet of the pure devotee who can take them beyond that ridiculous conception. That it's actually, as Prabhupada points out in an early lecture in the early days, the point is, why desire to become God when the devotee is greater than God? You see? God is some inferior position. You get to the Leela, Krishna and pastime, you'll see that actually being God is some inferior position. Being the body of God, that is a bigger position. Mother Yashoda, she's running after Krishna. You little rascal! Running with that whipping stick. Oh, he's terrified, running away, you see. And the cowherd boys, they have those wrestling matches. Sometimes Krishna loses and he has to carry the winner on his shoulders, you see. So why be God when you can be the devotee of God? The devotee of God is a bigger position than being God. See, they don't know these things because they haven't heard with an open mind from the pure devotees. But they're just cheating themselves with this rascal idea that I'm the Supreme. It's a rascal idea, you see. If you're the Supreme, why do you go to the bathroom? Why do you go to the toilet? Why are you getting old? Actually, one guru, he was saying that he was the Supreme, right? The disciples are, Guru Maharaj, how's you getting gray hairs? You know, God is eternally youthful. Oh, there's just some pastime I'm showing. Until you have respect for me, I'm therefore manifesting gray hairs. See, there's nonsense going on, isn't it? Next. Yes.
How important is it to have a complete understanding of the science of Krishna consciousness? Is it necessary to have a complete understanding?
Of course, we can never understand everything. Even Krishna is not fully Krishna conscious. Did you know that? Krishna, of course, is fully Krishna conscious. Sarvagya. He knows everything. But his glories are expanding exponentially at every nanosecond. Therefore, even though Krishna is fully Krishna conscious, as soon as he's fully conscious of everything about himself, his glories have expanded exponentially. And he doesn't fully realize Krishna is always, the point is, Krishna is always expanding his Krishna consciousness. So if Krishna has to always expand his Krishna consciousness, we will have to always be expanding our Krishna consciousness as well, you see. So even though one can be fully Krishna conscious, that means you're Krishna conscious enough to become a pure devotee and get out of the cycle of birth and death. Does that answer your question?
Not really.
Okay.
Maybe more on a theoretical basis.
Okay.
Like when we go through the theory in Bhagavad Gita class, I see that there's, including myself, there's a lot of devotees who don't really understand the science yet. There's so many details to it. And I'm thinking, is it necessary to...
No, one should be expert. Actually, one should be very expert in scriptural knowledge. There's a very nice verse in the Madhya Lila, chapter 22, text number 65. Shastra yukche tsuni punna dridha shada yana uttama adhikari se taraye samsara. One who is very, very expert in scriptural knowledge and has unflinching faith in the Supreme Lord, he is known as uttama adhikari, and he can live with the whole world by making everybody Krishna conscious. So, does Prabhupada want us to become like them?
Definitely.
Sure. He wants us all to become uttamadhikaris who have perfect knowledge of this philosophy. That knowledge actually comes by practice, by being fully surrendered to your spiritual authorities, by studying carefully, reading. Prabhupada said, every disciple must read all the books. That's one thing. Read all the books. One should be expert in defeating every kind of argument. Just like if an atheist tells you, there is no God, you can't prove to me there is God, what will you say? Can you defeat him? You see, we have to be expert. We have to be expert. Very expert in scriptural knowledge and in logical arguments also. Very, very expert. The more you do that, it'll help you to defeat the demon within your own intellect. And it will empower you also for spreading this movement and doing the greatest service for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srila Prabhupada and the spiritual master, you see, your Guru Maharaj. So one should become very, very expert in this knowledge. Prabhupada said, know these books like a lawyer knows his law books. That's how expert. Like a lawyer can go in the court. I was amazed that one time Guru Mata and I were out traveling and preaching. We were coming into Oklahoma City, and it was a rainy. It was on the freeway, you know, just rain. It was really slick. And we came over a little overpass, you know, and there was four lanes dead stop. We were going 70 miles an hour, and there's four lanes ahead of us at a dead stop and nowhere to go. And it was we put on the brakes and we skidded. So we basically back-ended someone and totaled our car. Just finished. Luckily, you weren't hurt. But I hired a lawyer, and it was amazing how expert this lawyer was. Because normally in America, if you have an accident, your insurance, it's your fault, you total your car, your insurance goes to the ceiling. This lawyer was so expert. Actually, I talked to an insurance agent. He told me the trick. I don't know if you can still do it. But he said, contested in the court. It wasn't my fault. Even though it was. Contested in the court. And then that will keep it from going into it'll be on hold before it's actually registered with the insurance company. And then change insurance companies. Switch insurance companies. And they'll... Then when you switch to the new insurance company, they'll check your record, and it's a clean record because it's held back because it's contested in the court. It doesn't go in the computer. And he said, the chances that I'm checking again later on are almost nil, and it worked like a charm. And I kept my insurance bill very low because of that very good trick, actually the insurance agent's trick. So, you see, he was very expert in knowing the laws and how to work the laws in such a way to one's advantage. So in that way of being, you should be very that expert in scriptural knowledge and logical arguments. Prabhupada said, I act like a king because nobody can defeat me. You must be like that too. That's how expert you should be. You should be a philosophical king that nobody can touch you. You can defeat. It's called Digvijay Pandit. Prabhupada said, and Digvijay means one who conquers in all four directions. You see? Digby said, he said, go village to village, town to town, and make Digvijay that there is God. I can prove there is God. Who are you to say there is no God? Come on. Prabhupada said, just like that, you see. Who are you to say there is no God? Come on. You see, you can defeat everyone, you see. Well, one sannyasi called it philosophical gunslinger. You should be like a philosophical gunslinger. You can shoot down all opposing arguments. If we're going to conquer the world, Prabhupada told us, become guru and deliver the whole world. So if we're going to do that, we have to be philosophical gunslingers who can defeat all opposing arguments. You see? All opposing arguments. We have to cut to shreds in personalism, hedonism, voidism, cut it all to shreds. Atheism, pseudo-religion, you know, all this nonsense, ritualism, cut it to shreds and establish Vaishnava Dharma in every town and every village on this whole planet. That is our mission. So you just become super expert in this knowledge. So you must scrutinizely study all these books and learn the art of philosophical debate. Very important, especially for brahmachari, you see. Especially for brahmachari. But everyone, ladies, householders, everyone should know. especially brahmacharyas, because you're a full-time preacher. You should become the most expert first thing. He had his hand up earlier, so, yeah.
What is the importance of feeding a cows in Vrindavan?
Because the cow should not starve. Next. Yeah.
Nectar of devotion, I read that pure devotional service, one of qualities of pure devotional service is that it is rarely achievable. So why it is so?
Why is it so difficult to achieve pure devotional service? Because everybody is caught up in sense gratification, that's why. Everyone's going crazy. There was a movie when I was a kid. The movie title was, It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. And that's a fact. It is. It's a crazy place. It's an insane asylum. The leaders are insane. The rock stars are insane. The novelists are insane. The professors, the PhDs are insane. The science are insane. Everybody is crazy here. It's an insane asylum. So to go into an insane asylum and try to establish try to be sane is quite a challenge. But if you take shelter of someone who is sane, the bona fide spiritual master, that's the key, you see. Taking shelter of the bona fide spiritual master, find that person who is sane and put yourself under their order, under their direction, and by that protection and guidance of the bona fide spiritual master, you will achieve sanity. But how many people do that? How many people take gurus and don't take it very seriously also? Yeah, guru said this, guru said that, but I have my own opinion. You know, no. When you take a spiritual master, you have to take it seriously. Now he is my ultimate authority. Let my every word, my every thought, my every deed in all times, places, and circumstances be fully, absolutely pleasing to him. How many people are embracing that move? You see, even amongst initiated devotees in ISKCON, how many are truly embracing that move? You see, that's why it's rare. Next. Yeah. How the guru recognizes... What's she saying, Devi?
How the pure devotee recognizes... How the guru recognizes the pure devotee?
How the guru recognizes the pure devotee? By Shastra. See? Pure devotee is clearly described in the Shastra. The Prabhupada's books clearly describe pure bhakti. So the spiritual master can easily judge by the mentality of the student how much they are... in line with those descriptions given in the scriptures. You see? Even the face of the index of the mind. Even by seeing the face of a disciple, the spiritual master can understand so many things about that disciple. Whether they're tuned in or they're tuned out, whether their mind is somewhere else or their mind is Krishna conscious. Just by the face even, it becomes obvious. Mm-hmm. Does that answer your question?
Yes, but also from another side. If a student is looking for a guru, how he can see also a pure
how devotee? To choose your guru?
Yes, or how to see a pure devotee.
How to see who's qualified to be your spiritual master? You have to study the books.
But do you think everyone who is guru is pure devotee, or it's...
is everyone is a guru a pure devotee? Well, sometimes, unfortunately, they're not. We have some gurus who fell down and had illicit sex. We have some gurus who fell down. We had quite a few gurus who have fallen down, actually, in our movement.
But the guru never thinks himself a pure devotee.
The spiritual master thinks himself to be very fallen. Prabhupada said, I am not perfect, but my perfection is I'm serving the perfect. So the spiritual master says, okay, among all your disciples understand that I am perfect. He doesn't say that, you see. He feels that he is imperfect, but his perfection is he is perfectly serving his spiritual master. That is his perfection. So how would one choose the guru who is qualified? Is that the question? Well, you have to read the books and understand what is the actual qualifications of a spiritual master. Then you see... You can judge by hearing about and by hearing directly from and seeing the activities of the spiritual master, different spiritual masters, and see, well, okay, who's purely following You know, those who are purely following, who inspires me the most that I should become a pure devotee? You see? So that's how you choose your guru. You study the books, you see who's actually qualified according to the Prabhupada's teachings, who is purely practicing and teaching Prabhupada's teachings, and who, all of those, who inspires me the most to become a pure devotee?
And if I'm not pure devotee, how can I see pure devotee?
Through the eyes of the scripture. Just like this was, I remember when I was at, before I joined, I was a hippie songwriter, really puffed up character, and I thought I knew a lot. I heard a little bit of the philosophy and how our senses are imperfect. So I met one brahmachari. It was actually Chitsukananda Das, now my godbrother. I met him on the Berkeley campus. And I said, "You Hare Krishnas, you say your senses are imperfect, so how do you know Krishna is God?" And he went, he couldn't answer it. I was really proud. I defeated that Hare Krishna. Yeah. So, but the answer is by hearing from the bona fide authorities, your imperfect senses become perfected. So that way you can actually know. You see. Even though your senses are imperfect, when you hear or you read Prabhupada's books, now your senses are becoming perfect because you're hearing from Prabhupada. And by that perfect vision that you're getting by submissively hearing from Prabhupada, now you become empowered to tell what is right and what is wrong, what is favorable and what is unfavorable for your spiritual life. You understand? By the mercy of Prabhupada, his books give you the power, that power of vision that you seek. It's all there in the books. You will get the power of vision in the books.
Prabhupada was pure devotee.
Huh?
Prabhupada was pure devotee.
Prabhupada was what?
Pure devotee.
Yes. And those who are strictly following Prabhupada, they're also pure devotees, you see, because they're strictly following Prabhupada. And you can also become the pure devotee. You want to become the pure devotee? I will teach you how to become the pure devotee. Because I learned from the pure devotee how to be a pure devotee. Now I will teach you how to be the pure devotee. Okay? Back here.
Can you make my friend at least pure devotee?
If he surrenders to me, yes.
I will meet you next time in Bulgaria.
He's willing to do whatever I say and follow all my instructions. I'll make him a pure devotee. By Prabhupada's grace. That's
we'll make a discussion.
Yes.
Srila Gurudev, it's mentioned that pure devotional service, it should be free from all tinges of karma and jnana. So I'm just wondering,
what was the first word?
Karma, jnana.
Okay, yeah.
So I'm just wondering this point about that one should be very expert in defeating all philosophical arguments.
That's bhakti jnana. Yeah. That's bhakti jnana.
Can you talk a little more about that? How to balance it? How much?
Prabhupada, it's very clear. Actually, it's very clear in a letter that Prabhupada wrote me when I was a young brahmachari. Because I was thinking, yes, I must become very, very learned. But we had very little time to read. I was with Vishnujana Swami. Actually, we had a traveling rock opera. We rehearsed all morning. The afternoon, we go out on Sankirtan. So I'm thinking, where are the time to read? So when everyone went out to the Sankirtan spot in front of the New York City Library, I took a different route on the subway. I went to Tompkins Square Park, where Prabhupada began the movement. I went to that tree where Prabhupada started the movement, and I wrote Prabhupada a letter there. Prabhupada, I don't get enough time to read. I complained. So I got a nice letter from Prabhupada straightening me out, you know. He said, what is the good of so much knowledge without practice? It will become dry and useless in due course of time. He said, actually, there's much time for studying, he told me. He said, now you follow the orders of your authorities. He said, he made it very clear. So, now that you become a jnani, Prabhu, I can't wash the dishes, I'm memorizing slokas. This is more important than washing the dishes. No, washing the dishes is, in one sense, more important than memorizing verses. You see? Because when you actually apply bhakti, then you're living in it. And here's another example. It's a living reality. It's realized knowledge when you apply it. If you don't practice bhakti, you only study it, you don't realize it, it remains theoretical. I'll give you another example. Actually, the devotee is actually here. It's interesting. He's remembering the pastime he and I had years ago, back in 1978. I was being sent from Atlanta to become the vice president of our Houston temple. When I got there, Krishnamurti Prabhu, who I'm meeting every morning now, good Guru Prabhu, he said, "Sankarshan Prabhu, come with me." He took me to the kitchen. He said, "Here's your spoons, here's your spots, here's your pots, here's your spices. You're the head cook, Haribo, I'm going to Miami." So I got demoted. I traveled all the way to Houston to become the vice president. I got demoted to cook as soon as I walked in the front door. I went, well, I got to surrender. But there was no time to read. I was like really heavy. And the temple commander said, "It's Maya to read Prabhupada's books." Can you imagine? The temple commander said, "It's Maya to read Prabhupada's books. You should always be working. Should never read. Don't read at all. It's Maya." Can you imagine the temple commander? I asked the temple president, I said, "Is it Maya to read Prabhupada's books in the class?" He said, "No, you should read it." And he wanted me to read a half an hour a day, but it was tough because my service was so intense. I was the cook and the bajari. All the devotees went on Sankirtan. The temple president lived away somewhere with his wife in an apartment. I didn't see him. I was all alone in the temple all from like 9 in the morning till 6 in the evening or 7. I was all alone in the temple. It was just me. If the door rang, I had to take care of the guests. The phone rang, I had to answer it. Every RT I had to do, every preparation. And where's the time to study, you see? Where's the time to read? I found reading time. I finally found some reading time. Once a week when I was stirring the burfi, I could read. While I was stirring the burfi. That was the only time I could pick up a book. That's how heavy it was. And I was thinking, wow, you know. But then, there was a tape player. And the bajari room with a speaker in the kitchen. There was like two or three cassettes, and that was it. But I heard the Hyderabad temple opening address hundreds of times. And that just went deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. Prabhupada said in one of his tapes, he said, "Always be engaged in studying. Always be engaged in studying." And he said, "And always be engaged in service." So how can you do that? How can you always be engaged in service and always be engaged in studying? I finally figured it out. You ever take chemistry when you're in school? Chemistry?
Yes, but I didn't pay much attention to it.
Okay, that's good. There's the lecture in the lab, right? So when you go to the lecture, you're learning about chemistry, right? When you go to the lab, you're also learning about chemistry, isn't it? Devotional service, practical service, is the laboratory section of the course. You're reading that you should dovetail your consciousness with the Supreme Consciousness, and now you're told to go wash the pots. Now you're doing it. You understand? So you're not learning the science of chemistry in the lab, you're only learning it in the lecture? No. When you go to the lab, it becomes even more realized because I was told in the lecture, H2O equals water. I went to the lab, I took two parts hydrogen, one part of oxygen, and lo and behold, what did I get in my test tube? Water. Pani. Pani apo. I got water in my test tube. So when you go to the laboratory, now what you've studied becomes realized knowledge. So when you have to wash the pots or clean the toilet or go out and distribute books or whatever you're doing, your service, those things actually bring your theoretical knowledge you gain in the Bhagavatam class and by your reading the books, they now make it realized knowledge. So in that way, you can always be studying 24 hours a day. The theory and the practice of devotional service is all bhakti gyan. Anything else? Yeah.
I had an experience where a devotee had gotten like blasphemous.
And yes. Against you?
Yes.
Okay.
And so in that case, like to prove your innocence, how should you react?
Well, if someone starts blaspheming you, actually, it happened in the bajari room in Houston. One devotee is kind of offensive. You know what he did? He punched me in the face right in the bajari room. So what do you do? And somebody comes up and punches you in the face, right in the vagina. I don't know what he did, but he was really angry. He socked me in the face with a fist. Kabow! Right in the pujari room. So what do you do? And what I said to him, I said, do you realize you just hit a Brahmin? Did you realize you just hit a Brahmin? Because that's really offensive, you know, don't hit a Brahmin. And he went, that's all I did. I said, do you realize you hit a Brahmin? I didn't, that's all I said. I didn't get angry. I just said, did you realize you just hit a Brahmin? So you got to be kind of creative, you know, and keep cool. And I defeated him, but I didn't get angry. He was completely defeated. I pulled the rug out from under him totally. I totally neutralized him. They didn't have to put him in a wrestler's hold or, you know, hit him back or yell at him. Nothing. I just, did you realize that you hit a Brahmin? That's all I did. And he was completely defeated. He went, oh. He was totally defeated. So use that to use some creativity sometimes with our philosophy.
Now this person was also like threatening, you know, so like it's kind of very...
Well, you could say, would Prabhu, would you like me to, would you be happy if I died right now? You know, be a little creative. Would you be happy if I dropped dead right now of a heart attack? Would that make you happy? He said, yes. Then I say, Krishna, please, may I die immediately to please this Vaishnava. You see, be creative. Be really creative, you know, poetic, like a poet, you know. You have to be a poet sometimes in Krishna consciousness. Poetic. Poetic, being a poet is one of the 26 qualities of a Vaishnava. So be poetic. Instead of being like, instead of coming down to his level, you have to be poetic. I would try something poetic like that, you see. You have to be his well-wisher. You can't come down to his level of being like a barking dog. You have to be the Vaishnava is the ever well-wisher, not just Prabhupada, we're all supposed to be ever well-wishers of all living beings, you see. You have to be his well-wisher. And if you genuinely are his well-wisher, Krishna will give the intelligence how to say just what he needs to hear to neutralize his offensive attitude. You understand?
If it prolongs and, you know, they have certain attitude that, you know, they're not very friendly or not, you know, they have something going on.
Well, I have that even with godbrothers here in Vrindavan who are not friendly to me at all. Most of them are super friendly, you know, embracing move. But some of them are like... So what I do, I just ignore them. I'm willing to open my heart and reciprocate if they show, you know, a little sign of desire, but they're like this... I just ignore him. I don't let it get to me at all. I just feel sorry for him. That's that they don't know how to reciprocate with their own godbrothers. But I feel sorry for them. You know, feel sorry for them.
Because from what I realize with that person is like when they need you for something, you know, and then they're like, you know, they're cool with you. But otherwise, you know, they could be in their own mood and they could put you.
Well, you can preach to them. You can also point it out to them. You can preach to them. You can preach to them. You can preach to them. Prabhu, I have this doubt in my mind. I have this concern in my mind. Just open your heart to them. Can I have a little talk with you? It's an ongoing thing. You can have a talk with them. Work it out. I would say, Prabhu, can I have a meeting with you? We can sit down and talk for a few minutes. I would just open your heart to them. Explain exactly what you're telling me. Okay? Okay, next. Actually, our time is up. This is the last question.
Yeah, last question. Today you talk about how to recognize guru and shastra vision. But I see that, nevertheless, this process, yoga nashta, is going on. And even
what's it called?
Yoga nashta. It's
yoga, what's the word?
Broken. From Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Ivam parampara praptam imam raja shividu sakalaneha mahata yoga nashta parampara.
Yeah.
Because of time, discipline center is broken. And
yes.
How wonderful is that? It's, we are reading something from Prabhupada books. But according to our previous background, our previous realization, we tried to interpret that. Like, for example,
That is our rascal nature.
In Russia, we have, you know, now sannyasi who dancing on the stage with women openly.
He does what on the stage?
They say on the stage.
What does he do?
Dances on a stage.
Embracing women.
Huh?
They have a sannyasi dancing on a stage with women in Russia.
Embracing women and dancing.
Embracing them?
Yeah.
And Iskan sannyasi?
Iskan sannyasi, yeah.
Well, don't, are you his disciple?
No, I'm not.
Okay, well, don't become his disciple. write a letter to the GBC. You should write a letter to the GBC.
No, we try, but they said, no, it's nice, they're friends, they make some project. It's for preaching, you know, and who are you to criticize them? Don't be judgmental.
Well, I would. They have programs where I have a sannyasi dancing and embracing women. I wouldn't invite anybody to those programs. I would go out and do your own preaching. I wouldn't worry about it. If you can't stop it, just go out and do your own preaching.
No, yeah, but I mean that it's clearly from Prabhupada.
I mean, I see so many discrepancies in ISKCON also. You're not the only one.
What is
the question? The thing is, there are discrepancies in our society. Just like the beards. You know, Prabhupada said everybody should be clean-shaven? You know that? And even in Chaturmasya, Prabhupada didn't like beard.
Yes.
But yet, it's a big fashion now. That's the advantage of our disciples. I can force them, I had to force them to shave. I can keep them shaved. Leave my disciples. My duty is to train my disciples to purely follow Prabhupada. I can't influence that sannyasi to stop dancing with women. If he keeps dancing with women, he will dance out of this movement also in due course of time. Here's the realization I had many years ago in Vrindavan. I had this realization in the Bhagavatam class, you see. This movement is, Prabhupada said, this movement is destined to go down in history for having saved the world. It's destined to do that. Now, if somebody in this movement is doing nonsense like sannyasis dancing with and embracing women, that is a impurity in this movement, okay? So Krishna will take care of that in one way or another. Here's what will happen to that sannyasi. He'll give it up. You see, he'll give it up. He'll stop doing that. This movement is a pure movement. Any impurity in this movement must sooner or later be cleansed out, just like turning butter into ghee, you see. The impurities have to be burned out of this movement in due course. So three things, if the sannyasi is embracing women, one of three things will happen to purify this movement. He'll give it up. He'll realize his mistake. He'll stop doing it. He'll bloop. He'll leave the movement, or he'll die. By one of those three means, Lord Chaitanya will purify this movement of that contaminated activity. He'll give it up. He'll bloop, or he'll die. And that's the answer. I gave that years ago in the Bhagavatam class for the same sort of question. Right here in Krishna Balaramanja. I gave the same answer like 10 years ago. So, whatever impurities are in this movement, they will be, extricated? Those impurities will be removed in due course of time. Because this movement is going, Prabhupada said, this movement will go down in history for having brought the entire world out of chaos. So, it's going, you know, any devotees who are introducing chaos to this movement, they are against this movement, actually. They're polluting this movement, and they will realize their mistake, and they'll bloop, or they'll die, and that way the movement will be purified of that, rid of that impurity. Yes.
Serving at the prasadam.
Now we'll go ahead and stop here. We have some special prasadam. It was offered last night. We have Radha and Krishna right here, and they had their wonderful Rasa Leela, and so many millions of gopi girls were also dancing with Krishna last night here, and actually this. And so we made some special sweet rice. This was offered on the altar the whole night. Very special sweet rice. Anybody can come now and get a little of this special sweet rice. So we thank you all very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Guru Primanandi.
Jai.